Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, November 14th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll learn about becoming a certified nurse through the UAS CNA program. Ben Huff will highlight an upcoming photography lecture and workshop at the SLAM. Amanda Flori will fill us in on an upcoming open mic for kids. We'll learn about a showing of, or a preview rather, of Perseverance's new production, Hold These Truths. And Peter Metcalf and Kathy Ruddy will tell us about 150 Reasons Why We Love Alaska. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 39 degrees at the Juno Airport.
People opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota stalled construction at a site Friday, where 33 people were arrested. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is waiting for word from the Obama administration on a decision whether or not the project will receive final approval. Tribal leaders are hoping President Obama will halt the project. The CEO of Energy Transfer Partners, the company behind the pipeline, told CBS News Friday he believes the incoming Trump administration will help complete the project. CEO Kelsey Warren also says those protesting the pipeline cannot stop it. Meanwhile, supporters of the tribe, including those camping near the tribe's reservation and people across the country, are planning a National Day of Action against the pipeline on Tuesday. Demonstrations are planned at U.S. Army Corps of Engineers offices in an effort to put pressure on the Obama administration. As President-elect Donald Trump starts to put together members of his administration and speaks out about his plans for office, which includes immigration, leaders of a southern Arizona tribe say they will not support a border wall on their land. Part of the Tohono O'odham Nation's reservation extends into Mexico and covers 75 miles of the international border. Reporter Carrie Young has more.
The tribe's chairman and vice chair say the plan is always to try to work with whoever holds the office of the United States president. But they add it's still too early to tell exactly how Donald Trump's administration will impact the tribe. Vice Chairman Verlin Jose says tribal members have traversed their ancestral land since time immemorial, and a wall of any sort would not be supported by the community.
Over my dead body will a wall be built. I don't wish to die, but I wish to work together with people so we can truly protect the homeland of this place they call the United States of America. Not only for my people, not only for our Tohono O'odham members, but for the American people.
Jose says he invites President-elect Trump to come down to the reservation to see why a physical wall, in his opinion, would not be a good idea for the tribe or for the country. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
Veterans were honored Friday at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Drum groups and a gourd dance were part of the celebration. Veterans at the event say some of their current needs include health care, housing repairs, assistance obtaining Veterans Affairs benefits, and aid for the homeless who served in the military. Veteran Alexander Garnett from Okeawinge Pueblo sees a need for more Native American representation and allies in positions of governing to help veterans. He says part of that includes getting Native people to the polls.
We need help for sure, and we need to, because most of our people are like post-traumatic syndrome. The veterans don't see it as that, and they're not helping us at all. And that's one thing that we need to, you know, get going. And like I said, but we do also need to vote so we can make the Congress in Washington aware of our problems so they can be able to help us, you know, because we don't have a block.
Garnett says he voted on Election Day but did not want to disclose his choice for U.S. president. Veteran Ben Graywolf from Albuquerque was not shy about who he voted for.
Yeah, I voted for Trump. We're looking for Mr. Trump to keep that promise. Donald Trump said that we are not going to forget the veterans, our war heroes. He says, we will not forget them. He said he's going to keep that promise, that he's going to make sure that our veterans get the first class rate medical services. And I'm like,
All right, let's see it happen, you know?
Other veterans at the celebration say they're optimistic about the next presidential administration and want to see action from all elected officials. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 14th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. And joining me now in the studio is a team from the UAS CNA program. Director Suzanne Malter, welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Thanks for having us.
Also, Devin West, she's a graduate. And Wendy Cole, welcome to the show, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Suzanne, let's start with you. What is the UAS CNA program? What does it look like?
The course is the Certified Nurse Aide course. And it is a 9-credit course, 170 plus hours in a semester. The students will learn a body of knowledge that will help them as they provide primary nursing care in the different places in town where they would be employed. And also they will learn a lot of hands-on skills. 22 in particular they will master, if not more. But okay. 22 will be tested or potentially tested by the state when they have their certification exam. So they are learning theory and skills and will then graduate and work at Wildflower Court, the Pioneers Home, Bartlett, any place that is providing health care.
For a person to qualify for the CNA program, what sort of educational background do they need?
Well, the students need to either... they need to have completed a freshman English class, freshman in college, or a high school advanced English class, or they just take an accuplacer exam at the university and pass at a level that shows that they have reading comprehension so that they can read the textbook. We have students from all different backgrounds and from countries where they had different kinds of education than us, but... the accuplacer test is pretty accurate in helping us determine if students will be successful.
A GED or not? Yes, GED.
GED, but still with a GED, if they haven't taken advanced English and passed it at a specific level, we encourage almost all of our students to take the accuplacer at the university. They mm-hmm. sit for the exam, they take it, they get a score, and that's just lets us know that they're going to be successful.
Okay. Devin, you're a graduate 2014, right?
I am.
Tell us about a day in the life of a CNA. What's your job like?
Well, at Bridge, it's a little different than a regular CNA. A regular day starts out, I go in and I have coffee and I get to read the newspaper with my participants. So that's always something I look forward to. After that, we play some card games. We do some dice games, work with their minds a little bit. We move to our day area where they do physical activities, they play beanbag tossing games, we play basketball-like games, we do volleyball, we play a game called noodle ball, which is foam noodles that they hit a balloon with. It's a lot of fun. They have a lunch every day at 12 o'clock. Right after lunch, we do what's called a walkabout, where we just kind of walk around a little bit, stretch our legs, and then we sit down for an hour of exercise.
Okay. How about you, Wendy? What does your day look like?
Well, I'm a full-time employee with the University of Alaska, and this makes it really interesting because I was able to use the tuition waiver to get my CNA certification, and I graduated in the spring of 2015. So I work by day at the University of Alaska in admin business services, but I find so much joy going to the Pioneer Home a few times a week, and I was initially hired on as a certified nurse aide, which I received my certification, but I also have picked up the activities role as well on occasion. And, you know, my CNA work consists of, you know, coming in for my shift, checking in on everybody, make sure I know where all of my people are, all of the residents, make sure they're safe and secure, and do the daily things that are required of a CNA, gather supplies, chart, interact with the residents, the individuals, and just really establish that bond with them, because it is through that bond that you can truly become that certified nurse's assistant and know how to truly take care of that individual.
Suzanne, do these seem like typical placements for you?
Well, they're a little unusual, which is the beauty of having the certification. We have students that are, we have had students who have been health aides at the school district since they've cut back on the number of nurses in the school district. I've had students that are health aides, very different from taking care of elders. I have students at Bartlett in the surgery. I've had students do that in surgery clinics, Valley Medical, private nurse practitioner clinics, welfare court. At welfare court in the Pioneers Home and the hospital, the CNAs will do vital signs. They'll help people with baths. They'll help people eat. They take care of catheters. They do a whole variety of things. Devin and Wendy have kind of an, it's just one of the many things that CNAs do, which theirs has been physical therapy and activities. Again, Wendy does work on in the neighborhoods and does that. But at Bartlett, students or CNAs are in OB. They're in CCU. I've had a couple in the CCU, a couple still there in the CCU. They sometimes do clerk work at the desk, but they also do all those other things. It's really kind of primary nursing, what we used to call primary nursing.
And you've mentioned a lot of different positions and venues across the town.
Yeah.
It sounds like you'll have no problem getting a job.
No problem. No problem. Absolutely no problem. REACH likes to employ CNAs for their medically fragile programs. Again, you've got Wildflower Court, Pioneer Home, Bartlett. JAMI really loves having CNAs. They don't have a CNA position as such, but it is a certification that is really valued.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Devin, it sounds like your job's very fulfilling. Tell us about when you were going through the program. Was it challenging, enjoyable, hands-on? What was it like?
It was actually kind of put right in my lap. It wasn't something that I expected that I was going to do, and it's not something that I saw myself doing until I was already in the program. Right off the bat, it was very fun, very exciting. I love the healthcare field to begin with, and I was in the intro to health sciences class with the high school, and that's how I kind of got my foot in the door with healthcare. But the CNA course was very hands-on. It taught me more about how to treat people with different disabilities, different ailments. Trying to think of what, we did so much. It's such a well-rounded course. There was a little bit of test taking, but mostly hands-on, kind of get your hands dirty and get right in there and learn absolutely everything in such a condensed amount of time.
Okay. And Suzanne, you said 170 hours?
It's about 170.
How does that span out?
10 hours a week. So there's
and how many weeks?
It's 13 or 14. Okay. So in this coming spring, we're offering two classes at UAS. In the fall, we offer one class for 10 students, and in the summer, one class for 10 students. But in the spring, we have 20 seats for two different classes. One class is 10 hours. It's 2 days a week, 9:30 to 3:30, traditional daytime. And then we've got this class that was created for, again, high school students, workers, and that is an evening class for 3 hours and a Saturday class for 7 hours. So it's 10 hours. Each class is 10 hours. And we do have 6 days of clinic, which is how you get those extra hours. I know it looks like in your brain you're thinking, how does 14 weeks, 10 hours equal 170? Well, we're in clinic. The students have, they work at Wildflower Court and Pioneers Home. And they get the experience of going in at being there at 6 and working a day shift.
Okay. If somebody wants more information or to sign up or to register, learn more, where should they go?
To the UAS online website. Go to Career, the Career Education Program, Health Sciences. The application is there. I do want to let folks know that It takes about a week to apply because you need a physical, you need a PPD, you need a criminal background check, a test for TB.
Okay.
Criminal background check, acuplacer test. You have to submit your application. But I do want folks to know that we have there's scholarship money out there. We will help you find avenues to get, hopefully, to get at least partial funding. Not everybody's going to receive funding, but we are always seeking out monies and want this to work for students. So there is some money available. But hand in the application, and then we'll send you in the direction of applying for either Work at Welfare Court, Department of Labor money. I know the high school, like Devon, was sponsored. So there's some money coming from the high school as well.
Okay. Wendy Cole, Suzanne Malter, Devon West, thank you three for coming in and talking about the UASC and A program. Is there anything we're missing? Anything you want to add?
No, but thank you so much for having us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, take
care. Yeah, thank you.
Comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, November 14th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. I've been joined in the studio now by Marjorie Menzi and Ben Huff. They're both on the board of directors of Friends of the State Library Archives and Museum Board. Thank you for coming on the show, you two.
Thank you.
Okay, so why don't we start with you, Marjorie? What is the Friends of the SLAM like?
Well, it's a wonderful organization. It's been around a long time as Friends of the Museum, but now we have an expanded responsibility for the library and archives as well. And what we basically do is support the activities of those organizations with support for lectures, exhibits. We have a scholarship for Alaskan Natives. We have programs for young people. We had some wonderful activities associated with the First Folio, which was the Shakespearean exhibit that the library brought to Juneau. We're just so lucky to have this new APK building, the Andrew P. Kashevaroff building, and all that's in it with the new library, archives, and museum. And so the Friends are very happily supporting some of these activities.
Okay, and among them, you're bringing in Brian and Ash Adams. Ben, why don't you tell us about these two?
Yeah, so we were taking the opportunity sort of on the success of the Alaska Positive exhibition, right? The biennial statewide photography exhibition that just opened this past Friday. It's on till the third week in January, and we really wanted to sort of put together some programming that took the opportunity to celebrate photography throughout that time period, right? So we're bringing down to Juneau here this Friday, Brian and Ash Adams, who are two photographers out of Anchorage who are documentary fine art photographers that have spent most of the last few years working in the northwest corner of the state. Brian was born in Kivalina, and they've both been in and out of Kivalina and Shishmaref and Wainwright and Point Hope, Kotzebue, making pictures. Brian specifically working on this larger project called I Am Inupiat. And he was just in Alaska Magazine on the cover here this last month, going into these communities and documenting and talking about climate change and talking about sort of the successes, but then also sort of the challenges of some of those communities. And this last summer, they did a workshop in Shishmaref with a group of high school and middle school students, this workshop called Chasing Alaska, which was about photography, and it was about authorship, and it was about storytelling, and it really was sort of positioned around communities and specifically kids in communities using their phones, right, using iPhones, these ubiquitous things that we use all the time. We take pictures, you know, all day long, all of us, Instagram and Facebook, and using them as these tools of storytelling and of sort of taking control of the narrative of their communities. And it was a really successful workshop, and they were really excited about the workshop, and we were putting together this sort of series of things that will go all month long. It was a really nice opportunity with the support of the Friends, right? This is the money comes from community members that buy a Friends membership. It gets you into the museum, but it also funds these types of things. Brian and Ash will come down. They'll get into town on Thursday, and they're giving a free lecture at the museum on Friday night at 5:30, which will be out there about their work and their process and being working photographers and traveling. And then Saturday will be a free lecture, sort of a different version of that workshop they did in Shishmaref. They'll do here for community kids. It's free. It's 1 to 4 on Saturday, this coming Saturday, middle and high school. Our website is foslam.org, foslam.org. You can register there. It's free. And we really, the new museum has a really wonderful classroom, a wonderful lecture space, and we want nothing more than to fill that classroom space with kids on Saturday.
Ben, you're a professional photographer too, right? How would you describe, sort of how you admire what they do and mm-hmm. what they do in general?
Yeah, I mean, they have a really, they're young, right? I mean, to me, they're young. They must be early 30s. And they're incredibly smart and incredibly hungry, and they have, commercial careers. I mean, they're, doing work for editorial work and magazine work and commercial work. And then they're, sort of put words in their mouth, I think, probably, but the work that sort of sustains them, the personal work and things that they sort of get paid for on the back end to some degree, but the work that the work as an artist or as a photographer or someone that deals in social commentary, the sort of work that you would do if no one was paying you is this work, right? Going into these communities that they love and that they have history in and that they have family in, and making pictures, sharing stories and this probably sounds really hyperbolic, but sort of contributing to our history, right? I mean, photography, the Alaska Positive Project or the exhibition that's on right now, I mean, this is how we understand what's going on in the rest of the state, ourselves and on the outside. And it's people like Brian and Ash and you know, it's several others, obviously, that are sort of creating the narrative, right? I mean, they're giving us, they're our eyes out there, right? You know, a lot of those communities, you know, in the Northwest are places that, that most of us will never get to. But then the flip side of that, I mean, we're in Juneau and we're off the road system, right? I mean, the kind of things that they're going to talk about here in the workshop that they'll be dealing with kids here in Juneau, we live here, but it's also a very exotic place to people that don't live here as well, right? So it's about, you know, taking that camera and being able to tell stories and to be an author and to sort of take control. And I admire them for you know, maybe in the commercial world, in the art world, maybe sincerity isn't the right word, but it's the word that sort of comes to mind with them, right? Like they're incredibly hardworking, incredibly conscientious, you know, talented young photographers, and we're lucky to have them come down.
Okay, so they're going to be giving a lecture on 5:30 on Friday. Is that right, Marjorie?
Correct.
Okay, and then the workshop on Saturday starts at 1.
1 to 4.
Is there going to be space limited in that? And remind us again, what age group would benefit most from this workshop? What do you say?
We're talking about middle school students, so young teenagers and high school students. And there's actually... we will probably have a limit if we need to, but right now there are many spaces we'd like to fill. It's such a wonderful opportunity. I listened to Ben describing their approach to photography, and it's so aligned with the missions of the Library, Archives, and Museum, which is basically to preserve our past, to share and educate about Alaska's history and culture. And to have the young people involved in doing that is just a wonderful thing. So we're looking forward to having lots of young people sign up for the workshop on Saturday. And again, it's FOSLAM, FOSLAM.org. And it's a wonderful opportunity. It's free, just takes an iPhone. And if they don't have an iPhone, they should just let us know when they're registering, because we'll deal with that for them.
Great.
So look forward to
it. It sounds like a great opportunity, a way to use this technology in a productive, artful way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And it's free?
Free.
For middle school and young high school students.
Yeah. Middle school and high school, absolutely.
And as you know, often in schools, the use of iPhones is banned. So here we're saying, come you all, right. Bring your iPhone, have fun with it, really get a lot out of it.
Totally.
Learn how to use it well.
FOSLAM.org. This sounds like an opportunity not to be missed.
Exactly.
For middle schoolers.
It is. Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
It's terrific.
Well, thanks for what you two do with the Friends of the Slam. Please come back and let us know. I know you got a lot more stuff going on this year, and check in with us whenever you can.
Will do. Thank you,
Scott. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sorrow. If I could have you, if
Do you or someone you care for live with chronic pain or a chronic disease like high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease? You can learn to manage the symptoms, understand the disease, and communicate more easily with providers. Find a list of Living Well classes offered around the state at livingwell.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the American Diabetes Association, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 14th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 30 minutes until the top of the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by artist and mother Amanda Flory, NKRNN DJ, among other things. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
And also fifth grader and musician Mia Wade. Welcome to the show, Mia.
Hi.
Nice to have you both here. This is very cool. An open mic for kids coming up soon.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's going to be November 30th. So it's after Thanksgiving. It's the Wednesday after Thanksgiving. It's at COPA from 7 p.m. to about 9 p.m. It's free. It's for kids ages 10 and up. And we started this because Mia, my daughter, she's almost 11. She's been playing guitar for a couple years now, and she's been performing for her friends in school and just around town. And some kids are just feeling shy about performing, and so we're trying to give them an opportunity and a comfortable place to perform in. And so COPA is very friendly, and I think Mark is going to make some kind of special ice cream. And Dara Relatos is going to be our host. She's a really talented singer-songwriter, if you haven't heard her. She's been on the Karen and Spotlight series. She plays around town. She has beautiful red hair. She works with Juno Lyric Opera. She's amazing, so come and see her play, if nothing else. I think my brother Sammy will make a guest appearance. And then, of course, Mia's going to play a couple songs. Mia, do you know what you're going to play for everybody?
I might play some Otis Redding sitting by the dock.
Sitting on the dock of the bay?
Yeah, so that's my bet. Oh, sorry.
She was just singing that in the car. But we're pretty excited, and we really want kids to come and perform. If you don't have an instrument, we're going to provide a couple guitars. Please come
and ukuleles if you want to play ukulele, which are, I say, a lot easier, just say.
Yeah, so don't be discouraged if you don't have an instrument. And just know that we're going to have sign-ups at the door. You can sing, definitely sign up for one song. And if we have kids and we have enough time, you can sing more than one. But please come and just encourage other kids to perform. Come sing a song yourself and just kind of see what an open mic experience is like.
And if you want any help, we will play guitar for you. If you're not strong.
Mia says she's willing to accompany you, I think is what she's trying to get at.
Yeah.
So please just come and join us.
Mia, when was the first time that you played in front of other people, like your class or strangers?
It was a little while ago. What would you say?
Probably the first time as a talent show, like a couple years ago. And then when did you start performing for your class? This year or last year?
This year, because I'm a creator and stuff.
And what gave you the idea to perform?
Miss Harmon, hey, do you play guitar? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, cool, I didn't know that. And then I was like, hey, Miss Harmon, can I play on Fridays?
So you wanted to share it with your class on Fridays?
Yeah.
And so I have seen her play and perform, and sometimes it gives you, it's a little shy and you want to share things, and we just want other kids to come and share things too. So that's what this open mic is about on November 30th.
So fifth grade, remind us how old you are.
I am 10, and I'm turning 11 in 18 days.
Okay. So this is for people your age or up. That's right, right?
Yep, ages 10 and up.
Okay.
Hey, you can be 30.
What would be, Mia, your advice to maybe some people, there might be some kids listening or parents who have kids who are starting to play. What would be your advice to them to get them to come to your open mic?
If you have stage fright, I kind of had a little bit of stage fright for my first talent show. I would just close my eyes and look at something and just stare at it and try to sing to it, kind of.
So why should they come to this open mic? Do you think it's going to be fun for them?
Yeah, and you just gotta jam out. You don't have to play. You can just watch stuff.
Yeah, you can watch other people
and
perform.
If there's time, you can just hey, can I come up? Yeah.
So you think it's a good idea for them to come?
It's kind of a chill thing.
It's a chill thing?
It's blah. Blah. Hey, don't judge me.
No, it's okay.
It's a good judge.
I think it's going to be, we're trying to provide a really encouraging environment. And if you've never performed, this is the place for you because it's going to be a very encouraging, supportive environment. You have to start somewhere. And if you've never performed before and you've been too intimidated by a big talent show at school, this is going to be small. It's at COPA, our local ice cream shop where everybody's comfortable. Mark is going to make us ice cream. Mia is going to be there cheering you on. I am too.
And I will help if you want.
Yeah. So
and I have a feeling this is going to be very successful and a lot of kids are going to come. And maybe it will be the start of a new tradition. What do you think?
If it turns out that way, we hope so. But right now, we just want to get people in the door. And if it's something that people are really excited about, I'm happy to organize more in the future.
So again, this is Wednesday,
November 30th.
What time?
7 p.m. Sign-ups are at the door, so get there a little bit early. So in case we have a line, and we're going to sign up first come, first serve. And we're going to try to give everybody a chance. And then if we have enough people and people don't get a chance to perform, then we'll definitely do another one. So come and encourage other people to play. Come and play yourself. Sing a song. Play guitar. Play ukulele. November 30th at COPA. Thanks to Mark for donating that space. And Dara Rolatis is going to be our host.
I will be a partner host.
Have you made a Facebook event
there
for this?
There is a Facebook event. So if you go on Facebook and look up Youth Open Mic, it is on there. It is also on the Juno Arts Community Calendar. And it should be out in the Capital City Weekly and the Empire in the next couple weeks.
All right. Amanda Filoria, Mia Wade, thank you both for coming on the show. We'll see you on Wednesday, November 30th.
All right, thanks,
Scott. Thank you so much.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, November 14th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Leslie Ishii. She's the director of Hold These Truths, which is opening at Perseverance Theater this Thursday, and also Art Roach, the ED over at Perseverance. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Art, let's start with you. Hold These Truths. How did it come to your attention?
I was headed east for a visit with my wife and got an invitation to see Hold These Truths as presented by Epic Theater Ensemble about 4 years ago at the 14th Street Y in New York City. And I've always been interested in the story. My wife's a Japanese citizen but doesn't know this history, or at the time, I should say, didn't know this history. And so I dragged her along and was blown away by the craftsmanship, the stagecraft of directing the show. The actor Joel De La Fuente that we saw was phenomenal, different actor than Perseverance has engaged. And then most of all, the story of Gordon Hirabayashi, the man that this play is about. He's just an amazing human being. So spending 80 minutes with him in the theater, as it were, was fantastic.
Okay. Leslie, how did you get introduced to this show and become director and this whole story?
Well, actually, when it debuted at East West Players Asian American Theater, which is the oldest theater of color in the country now, about 10 years ago is when I first came in contact with it. And then I directed a shorter version of that piece for a school tour. And then years passed, and I have been off and on teaching with Perseverance and getting to know Art. And then when this piece came to his attention, gratefully, he called me to direct this production here opening this week.
And tell us a bit about it. What's it about?
Gordon Hirabayashi is a Japanese-American, and this play takes place in the late 1930s, 1940s, when the Japanese-Americans were evacuated to internment camps, World War II internment camps. And Gordon is an extraordinary human being in that he had the fortitude and the sense of principle to stand up against that injustice and to really demand upholding the Constitution.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this is based on a true story. And tell us about the writer of this play.
Oh, Jeannie Cicada. She's delightful. She'll be here this week for the opening. So I hope you all get to meet her at the theater, and she'll be doing some of the post-show discussions too. She's this incredibly talented actress and playwright, and just a brilliant. She's fantastic. But what I'm really appreciating is that she started this process. This was her first play. And while it debuted at an Asian American theater and had a few other productions after that, and then she kept with it and was able to take it to the Lark Playwriting Center in New York and keep working with it. And it was after that when I believe Art and Akiko got to see that production at the Epic Theater. So I was just sharing with some colleagues just earlier today that I'm so grateful she stuck with it, because there was a time when she first started as a woman of color playwright that getting beyond the ethnic theater circuit was about the farthest she could take this play. But because she stuck with it and our times have been getting more diverse in the theater, she's been able now to have these productions at major repertory theaters like the Portland Center Stage just recently, and just before that this fall at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis and St. Paul area.
Okay. And it's Greg Watanabe plays the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Art, I'm sure you've been – are you involved in this production?
I am. I'm the lighting designer.
Okay. So you've probably seen a lot of the rehearsals and things going on.
Yeah.
What's it look like? What can we expect in the show?
Well, Greg is Greg came to us through Leslie, and he's a tall, funny Japanese American actor who knows the story inside and out because he's lived with the development of the play for, it sounds like, almost a decade. Really knows Jeannie really well, so he knows it inside, outside, backwards, and forwards in terms of the history. And his version of it compared to the one that we saw in New York, which was a bit more Gordon was a bit more reserved and just sort of stuck through all these crazy, difficult things he had to go through with sort of a stiff upper lip and a lot of aplomb. Greg, um, Greg cuts it loose a little bit more. He's a little bit funnier. Not that Joel can't be a funny actor, but that's just the way that they went with it. Gordon was a Quaker, and they really explored it as if we were in a Quaker meeting room in a sense, and he was telling this story to us and then took us back into the past. And this is somewhere else. Yeah, this is more like being inside of a Japanese photograph of the period.
Leslie, what has impressed you most working on this production? What surprised you, or what are some takeaways? You know, it's interesting when you take art like this and put it on a stage, new things start to appear, right? Have you seen any of that?
Yeah. You know, what's really, as I mentioned, art's been great to bring really the first Japanese heritage and Japanese American team to this play. And I was curious to see how our culture and our legacy, because Greg and I both have family that were in internment camps, how that might inform this piece. And I think it has in very deep ways, some unexpected, some expected. And our scenic designer, Akiko, mm-hmm. She's a resident designer here at Perseverance. Her sensibilities of the Japanese culture have really also informed this play that have been surprising and deep and really gorgeous. And art's being a little modest, but as lighting designer, it's really been incredible in tech rehearsals to see him literally paint with light. And so I think you're in store for some really beautiful surprises. You know, every set and every production at Perseverance transforms that space. I think that'll be true to form with this piece too. I would also say what's surprising, as Art mentioned, is Greg has such an incredible range, and I've known him for a number of years as an artist. We're both based out of Los Angeles. I'm really, really inspired as a director because he has such range. He is very funny. He's got great comic timing and depth, and yet he can dig into the text and mine and find real nuance and pathos too. So you'll be entertained. You'll be hopefully, I think, inspired and touched by the courage of Gordon Hirabayashi, but it's all because it's coming through Greg. And Greg, you know, worked on Broadway recently. So we have the great fortune of this actor who worked on the Broadway show Allegiance, who's at the top of his game.
Where's he from?
He's based out of Los Angeles, and I believe he's born and raised out of the Southern California area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Art, can you give us the details about the play's opening?
Yeah, it opens Friday night, and it runs for 3 weeks instead of the usual four. So there's a little bit less time than usual. If you're a single ticket buyer and are just hearing about it for the first time, don't wait 3 weeks because it'll close. we have a pay-as-you-can preview Thursday night, and there's two more pay-as-you-can performances during the run, the usual Sunday. And then instead of the Thursday, which is Thanksgiving, we'll be performing on Wednesday that week. So it closes December 4th, and tickets are at ptalaska.org, 463-TIXS, or at the Jack Harside Books, either location.
And remind us when the writer, Jeannie, will be there?
She, I believe, arrives Thursday, but she'll be doing a post-show discussion.
That's right, on Thursday after the preview. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So come
that
to the preview
like a great
Thursday
opportunity.
And meet Jeannie. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Leslie Ishii, director, Art Roach, lighting designer of Hold These Truths. Preview this Thursday with the playwright in the house.
That's
sounds
right.
Like a great opportunity. Thanks for coming on the show, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This is Bird Note. Jays are smart. Many jays, including the blue jay, store food for sustenance in harsher seasons. Over a few months, an individual bird may cache nuts, insects, even worms in several thousand spots and relocate nearly all of them as needed. While some of us humans have trouble even remembering where we put our keys, jays seem to see and remember the physical world in exquisite detail. If jays, like this Stellar's jay, visit your yard, here's a puzzle game you can play with them. Each day, preferably when the jays aren't watching, place a dozen peanuts in different parts of the yard. They should be visible, but scattered. One on top of a stump, one next to a rock, below the birdbath. You get the idea. When a jay arrives, watch how long it takes to find the nuts. The next day, Place the nuts in a different array and watch again. Did the jays find them quickly? Possibly they already have a mental map of everything in the yard, so anything new, like a peanut in a novel spot, jumps out at them. See photos of all these birds, including that California scrub jay you just heard, on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 14th of November, 2016. It's the birthday of Astrid Lindgren, born in Vimmerby, Sweden, 1907, grew up on a farm in southern Sweden. One day, her daughter Karin was sick in bed, so the mother started telling her stories about a strong, spunky girl who makes fun of adults, gets by just fine without a family. And that girl was Pippi Longstocking. She had a pet monkey, magical powers, bright red pigtails. The story was published in Sweden as Pippi Långstrumpa in 1945. It's the birthday of William Steig, born New York City, 1907. The New Yorker bought his first cartoon when he was just 23 years old. He collected them in many books, including Small Fry, Spinky Sulks, Our Miserable Life. It was only late in his life that William Steig began writing books for children. And in 1990, he wrote Shrek, about a green ogre. The name Shrek means fear in Yiddish. He has nightmares about fields of flowers and happy children who keep hugging and kissing him. Eventually, Shrek meets an ugly princess. They fall instantly in love. And the book ends with the line, "And they lived horribly ever after, scaring the socks off all who fell afoul of them." And it's the birthday of Claude Monet, born in Paris, 1840, who, along with his friend Auguste Renoir, took their canvases outside to paint directly from nature, working as quickly as they could, so their paintings looked like sketches, and that sketchy style became known as Impressionism. In the last 30 years of his life, Monet painted almost nothing but the water lilies in his garden at Giverny, 4 acres where he built the bridges, dug the lake, selected all the flowers and plants himself. Monet, who said, "I am following nature without being able to grasp her. I perhaps owe having become a painter to flowers." Here's a poem for today by Marge Piercy, "Remnants Still Visible." Robins migrate, all school children learn, but here on the Cape, every winter a flock forms and stays long, frigid months after their compatriots have flown south. They live deep in the woods on hips and berries, weazened by cold. Sometimes they appear here among the feeder birds, one or two almost outcasts. Off Alaska, when humpback whales leave in fall as the waters freeze and the world turns white, heading for mating grounds off Hawaii and Mexico, certain whales remain. What makes a creature stay when almost all of its kind have moved on? In burned-out areas of Detroit, you'll notice one house still wears curtains, a bike locked to the porch. Sometimes in the suburbs, among tract houses with carpets of grass, one farmhouse lurks, maybe even with a barn. I imagine its owner, gray and stubborn, still growing the best tomatoes for miles, refusing to plant inedible grass, fighting neighbors about her chickens, a rooster who crows at 4, her clothesline a flag of defiance. Poem by Marge Piercy, "Remnants Still Visible," from Made in Detroit, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Staples, with copy and print solutions for small business, including color copies, presentations, and custom holiday cards. More in stores or staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 14th. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, the folks from Travel Juno will be here to tell us about conferences and meeting availability here in the town. Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum will introduce us to UAF History Professor Terrence Cole, the guest speaker for their annual meeting, and we'll hear about the collaboration between Greg Chaney, the Gold Town Theater, and Perseverance Theater to screen the Empty Chair documentary. Looking at the weather, the forecast for tomorrow calls for scattered showers with highs around 40, and on Wednesday, partly cloudy with highs around 40 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.